You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
The blog is called filmology.com. That's film with a PH. The man who writes or sprays his thoughts up there is Josh Nelson without any thought, consideration, or whatsoever. He's a film critic, supposedly. Josh, welcome.
Thank you very much for that.
It's a pleasure. I can deride him because he's still coming down from celebrating his beloved Bombers win yesterday. Did you go?
I did.
Feel good?
I celebrated long and hard into the evening.
We'll get you
can
a
we talk about that instead?
No, we can't.
Sure.
Absolutely, we can't. So, Iron Man 3. We are talking about the third iterations of films. If you come up with ones that aren't classic boy films, you get extra bonus points. But before we do that, let's get the Josh Nelson verdict on Iron Man 3. Most people love watching Robert Downey Jr. be Iron Man. He's a funny man. He's a skilled actor. What's it like?
Wow. I'm a little indifferent about this one, I have to say. And I love Danny Jr. and we both had a lot of fanboy
Avengers. The Avengers is a great film. Yep. A lot of fun.
You know, the first Iron Man, I thought the first half was great. I thought it was a nice origin story. The second one, contrary to most critical opinion, I actually quite enjoyed. It's camp. You know, Mickey Rourke is ridiculous and he had a parrot on his shoulder for some reason. Apparently that was written into his contract. It was fun, although, you know, not exactly sophisticated storytelling. This one came with a bit of expectation, primarily because the director and co-writer of this is Shane Black, who I've got a lot of time for. He wrote the script for Lethal Weapon back in the day and a really great film called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which starred Downey Jr. and sort of brought Val Kilmer's career back up about 5 or 6 years ago. And there's something that just doesn't quite work here, and I think it's because it's the third film syndrome. It's like they're not quite sure where to take it, what villain to drag out of the kind of the repertoire of the Iron Man backstories, and something just doesn't quite work, for or at least not for me. There are moments that are nice. The narrative itself is fairly coherent. The storyline itself, or the sort of
there's the odd plot hole, but you can't. I mean, all comic book films have plot holes. That's not really. There's no significant problem with that.
That's true. I mean, particularly the end. The ending's a bit glaring. It's a bit like, oh, there's that thing we should have thought of an hour and a half ago. Let's just do that. Oh, wow, that was. How fortunate we had that in hiding, and we'd forgotten about it without giving too much away. But there are some nice, let's start with the nice things. There are some nice elements here. I thought the take on terrorism was quite good for a Hollywood film. It was a bit of a twist there, a bit of sort of tongue-in-cheek of, you know, the way in which the Defense Force sort of creates its own enemies, perhaps, and the Defense Force contracting and the role of corporations in like the whole super soldier subtext or sub-narrative. And there's a lot of humor. They play up more his kind of incompetence and the way in which his suits don't work.
It's funny.
So the humor's upped from the previous films.
We were in a full cinema, lots of laughs.
Yeah, no, the response from this was pretty good. But strangely enough, it feels like a 1990s action film. That kind of camp level of humor, the sort of the pause and then the machinery not working or the gun not going off, all those kind of gags are the sort of the staple of 90s action cinema, which we'd kind of move behind, even to the point where the final scene takes place on at a cargo, sort of a docking yard with a massive shipping
Lethal Weapon, actually, wasn't it?
Lethal Weapon 2, Die Hard 3, like that was the space where all those climactic kind of action sequences happened in the 90s, which is, it almost feels out of place. And in some way, I wish that Shane Black had gotten hold of this.
You know what the problem is? The Avengers just set the bar too high.
Well, that's true.
That's the problem. It's a good film. It's a good film. It's a fun film. Look, I'll continue with Josh's review of Iron Man 3 in a moment. We've got someone else who wants to contribute. Finn's called from Kensington. Hi, Finn.
Hi.
How old are you, Finn?
Eight. Yeah.
And what did you think? Iron Man 3, any good?
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Why?
It's got lots of action and... his repulsors are really cool.
Yeah, armor's pretty cool,
isn't
it? Yeah, he does cool stuff with the armor, and he flies, and he's funny, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Look, thank you, Finn. Appreciate your call, you see?
Can't argue with that. I'm out of a job there. There you go.
I mean, the armor's good. it's not quite as... it doesn't quite get beyond the sum of its parts.
It does reference the Avengers, and maybe that makes the comparison even more sort of troubling because there's always references to the events of New York, talking about the end of the Avengers film.
I kept
thinking
Thor was going to leap in or the Hulk could pop up or something.
Well, originally I thought this film was touted as a kind of the next step with some of the appearances by the other actors, and without giving too much away, well, I just did. They don't really sort of shot, but you should stay after the credits because like most of the Marvel films leading up to the Avengers, there is the Sting scene, which I guess is a sort of a prompt for Avengers 2 or Thor, the second Thor film comes out this year. So I wanted to ask you something about Danny Jr. Did you feel like he was on autopilot?
Yeah, a little bit. Guy Pearce was very good. He's an enjoyable villain. He's a good bad guy.
And the villains were funny because it felt like, well, we've drudged up sort of Terminator and Universal Soldier. And so again, the 90s kind of, you know.
And look, it was okay. It's a decent film. hey, it's Blockbuster, special effects were good. I just, personally, as someone who feels like a comic book diehard, I feel the bar's been raised so high to Avengers, can't really compete. But hey, what I say is not going to stop people going to see it. 1300-222-774, I'm going to give you a bit of thinking material. I want your thoughts on third films. I'll get to your texts in a moment. Godfather 3 had nothing on the first two. Say it again, brother. Say it again. But have a listen to these. These are all films that are the third in a franchise.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me. So be it. Jedi.
You're about to complete a great quest. The Holy Grail, Dr. Jones.
Oh, rats.
This is it. Look. The shield is the second mark. We found it.
Mr. Anderson, welcome back. We missed you.
It ends tonight.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
There's quite a few in there. Surely the stinkiest, smelliest of all of those would have to be The Matrix third film. I'd love to know your text, though. That's surely one of the worst films ever made, isn't it?
Yeah, Matrix 3. It makes Godfather 3 look really good. Yeah.
I mean, Godfather, look, maybe if Godfather 3 had popped up on its own, we would have thought it was okay.
True.
1300-222-774. Good one from James. Toy Story 3 was a cracker. That is a good text. I would agree with you there.
Yep.
How about The Wizard of Oz, The Wiz, and the latest one? Oh, that's a good point, actually. The latest Oz film is probably the worst. Quite a few of you have been texting in the third Bourne movie was brilliant. Now, I don't remember them because they all sort of blend into one for me. I quite enjoyed them. What was the third one? Bourne Supremacy.
Ultimatum? I don't know. I get them confused.
Identity,
well.
Supremacy, Ultimatum. I think you're right. Yep. Ultimatum's the third one, but I can't separate them in my mind personally. Ocean's 13 was much better than Ocean's 12. That's from Helen. Again, I don't remember beyond Ocean's 11, but I take your point. Someone likes Godfather 3. The daughter's death scene was unforgettable. That's Brian listening in Singapore. And also, I hadn't thought of this one. Home Alone 3 in the Snow was a ripper. I'd love to hear your voice, but you can contribute on text. The phone number, of course, is 1300-222-774. Oh, wow, Samantha and Bendigo, you're not going to get many votes in this studio. Back to the Future Part 3 and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, two of my most favourite films ever. Josh?
I don't mind.
Back to the Future 3, it was terrible. The cowboy one.
No, it's fine.
The first one was so good.
Well, that's true. Nothing comes close to the first one. But, you know, as far as, you know, sort of pseudo-Western sci-fi films go, I thought it was a bit of fun.
Yeah, okay.
Come on, the hoverboard gets a go in the third one as well.
Yeah, hoverboard. Hoverboard's good. Do we like hoverboards? Oh, hoverboards. What's the car called again?
The DeLorean.
The DeLorean.
With the flux capacitor.
Alien 3, yep, absolutely terrible. The worst third film ever was Mad Max 3. I think, the Mad Max 3 would really give the third Matrix film a run for its money. I'd love to hear more of your contributions. We've got another film to review, although I love this text about Return of the Jedi. I'm with you, Raph. It's my least favourite of the original three. In the forest dance party scene at the end, I honestly expected Lionel Richie to walk out from behind a tree and sing. Oh, you're very witty. It's coming up to 17 minutes to 5 o'clock. 774 ABC Melbourne. I'd love your thoughts on the third iterations of films. Someone's got to come up with a really, really stonkingly good one. I'm sure they're out there. 0437 774 774. Terminator 3, Alien 3. Ugh, rubbish.
I think Alien 3 is underrated. There you go. It deserves more appraisal, reappraisal.
Walk out of my studio, young man. Walk out of my studio. It's
David,
rubbish.
No, David Fincher. He doesn't like it, but I think it deserves a bit of kudos.
I haven't seen it for a long time. Mark's called from Greensboro, though, with some thoughts. Yes, Mark?
Yeah, hi, Rob. Look, I just wanted to strongly disagree with what you just said about The Matrix.
Oh, okay.
I just found that the trilogy was was classical. It's going to go down as an all-time classic.
I couldn't follow the plot in the second and third ones.
I know. You need multiple viewings.
Right.
But isn't that the case with all great science fiction films?
No. The really great ones should have a broad audience, shouldn't they?
And how many times did you see Prometheus?
Once was enough, I'm afraid, Mark. Sorry. But look, I take your point, Mark. Surely there are many people out there who feel the third iteration is pretty good. I can tell on the text that as well. Quite a few of you, too, texting Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. And James Bond only gets better. Was Goldfinger the third one?
It was the third one, yeah. That's one of the better ones.
Yeah, that is one of the better ones. Look, we'll get some thoughts on Antiviral, which is a smaller release film, but David's called from Emerald. Hi, David.
Yeah, g'day.
What do you think?
Oh, Mad Max.
Yes.
1, 2, 3.
Did you like 3?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad, actually.
Oh, really? Oh, come on. 3 is with Tina Turner and Angry Anderson, isn't it?
Yeah, Beyond Thunderdome.
Yeah, that's kind of where they jumped the shark and lost the plot, isn't it?
I think the next one's where they lost the plot.
Oh, okay, yeah. But it doesn't count with the franchises that go for that long. But okay, so you thought it was okay. And Ray in Altona, I reckon I wonder if I'm going to agree with you on this one. What's your number 3?
Dark Knight Rises. I wouldn't say it's better than the first two, but I think it stands up as a extremely well done film. And I do have to agree with Alien 3, I've got to say.
Oh, I'm surrounded
there
by...
There you go.
I'm surrounded by people who are going to howl me down. Okay, Ray, you've... I'm going to curtail that one, because you know what? I didn't actually like the third Dark Knight film. Anyway, to go... Oh, Close Encounters of the First and Second Kind, shocking. Close Encounters of the Third Kind was great.
Waka, waka, waka.
Oh, I really like that.
You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
There's so many examples. I can't get through them all. X-Men 3 is a dud. Jaws 3, nope, no good. But Toy Story 3, Evil Pink Bear, ! Rye likes that. And Nikki's saying that all the Twilights and all the Harry Potters were awesome. I don't know if you'll get an agreement with Josh there. And yes, the Kozlowski's Three Colors trilogy, a few of you have mentioned all of them. They are all good. And you know what? Pirates of the Caribbean 3, if you're into those films, yeah, definitely the third one. That's a suggestion from Mark and Chelsea. Antiviral.
Yes.
Tell me a bit more about Antiviral. What is it? I know it's only on limited release, but... any good?
It is. This is a great film. We're going to go from one extreme to the other, from a film I was indifferent about to a film that I think is one of the best I've seen this year. Really impressive. Antiviral is the debut feature film from Brandon Cronenberg, who is the son of David Cronenberg, the esteemed Canadian filmmaker. This is a clever film. It's a low-budget sci-fi / body horror film, very much in the style of David Cronenberg's earlier films like The Brood, Shivers, Videodrome. So comparisons with his father are almost impossible to kind of get around, I think. But what it does is it weaves together a variety of very kind of contemporary themes, which I think the best sci-fi films always do. So the obsession with celebrity culture and celebrities, video piracy, issues of the body and technology, the kind of corporatization of the pharmaceutical industry. So the lead character in this film, played by Caleb Landry Jones, who's pretty much a newcomer to cinema, he's a viral engineer for a clinic that sells celebrity viruses. So the
celebrity viruses.
So basically, the sort of in the not too distant future setup of this film is that celebrity culture has reached a point where people go and are injected with, say, Britney Spears' flu, although they don't use specific celebrity names. So as a kind of, I guess, a logical and quite nightmarish extension of that obsession, so they can feel like they're a part,
right,
literally,
how bizarre,
of the celebrity. And, you know, it broadens the sort of the scope of this to butchers that, you know, reproduce sort of genetic clone steaks of cells grown from celebrities.
Right.
To sell. So there's a cannibalistic element to it as well. But what the central kind of conflict within this sort of social scene, I guess, is this guy who's trying to kind of duplicate the viruses before he gets them to the clinic and sell them on his own. So it plays on that piracy, that sort of technological, sort of nightmarish scenario. Really great. For me, it's the perfect melding of art cinema with genre filmmaking.
Right. Lo-fi? Low budget?
It's 3.2 million Canadian. So this is super
nothing,
small fry,
yeah,
but it looks stylish. I think despite the fact he's working in themes that are going to draw comparisons with his father, and look, David Cronenberg's kind of moved away from body horror over the last decade. He's different in the sense that I think early Cronenberg, David Cronenberg, has a sort of a darker or more wry sense of humor. There's something a bit more serious here in terms of the style of the filmmaking, the approach to the subject, but a really intuitive filmmaker, which you don't often get with debut films. There's normally a little bit of an inconsistency,
yeah,
or there's sort of the cracks are showing it before the polish normally comes later in people's careers. Really, really wonderful film. Engrossing, stylish, works to the budget. It doesn't try and overstep itself. I think some people might be turned off a little bit by the ick factor. You know, people,
yes,
have a sort of a tendency,
particularly
with surgical,
yep,
procedures, particularly,
yep,
needles on screen. There's a couple of times where we see the, you know, injections taking place, which is quite simple. I mean, it's the best form of horror because people can relate to it in a sense.
Of course.
Which I think is what makes this film function. It's, in a sense, it's a far-flung concept, but given the way in which celebrity culture functions now and the reach of corporations and medicine and so on, what makes this film scary and you know, the drama work
is it's believable.
Absolutely believable, yeah.
Doesn't sound very pleasant, actually. That's Antiviral.
1300
222 774. I want to hear about your third iterations of films. I can't pronounce it, but Nikoi Katsi, is that the third version of the Koyaanis Katsi? Nowhere as good as the first two. That's from Loz and Carlton. I don't know if I saw the third one. Which of the Rocky films are good and bad? I can't remember, is another text.
Oh, Rocky 3 is great.
Is it? I don't
remember.
That's
on with Mr. T, Eye of the Tiger.
Bring on. Oh, is it? Right. Is Eye of the Tiger only in the third one?
I think that it comes back into later ones, but yeah, that's where it gets its first
okay.
There you go. First impression.
1300-222-774. Johnny Northcott. Hi, Raf. A mate worked at a video store and said lots of people used to ask for the first two films when The Madness of King George III came out. I don't believe you. Surely not. Anthony says National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Good comeback after a rubbish sequel. I don't remember them. I only remember the first one. Do you remember the third one, American Vacation?
No, but with Madness of King George, they actually changed the title for an American audience. They dropped the third because they actually thought American audiences wouldn't go and see it because they'd think it was a sequel.
Oh, poor old Americans. And The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly brought the trio together. So is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly the third in the series or not?
Well, it's an unofficial... I mean, right. it's still that same riffing on that same character, the man with no name, the Clint Eastwood character. But yeah, they're not strictly sequels in the same way that some of the other films
are. Oh, but we'll allow that. Yeah. And I love the Riddick films, but what will the long-awaited third film be like? Is that the Vin Diesel
Pitch Black
sci-fi?
Was the first one?
Yes, right. Wasn't the second one really bad and the first one was really good or something?
Yeah, I'd put them like that. Yeah, that's
okay.
Fair enough.
And now, Antiviral, anything else to say about Cronenberg Jr.'s debut sci-fi ick factor but good?
Well, even just as a kind of from an anecdotal point of view, I think it's nice that so many directors have come along since, particularly Canadian directors, you know, interestingly enough, and have sort of tried to take the body horror mantle off Cronenberg as the sort of he was once called the king of venereal horror, if you can believe that. And there's something quite nice.
Sorry, the king of venereal horror.
Yeah, because so many of his films involve this transition of viruses. And there's something very fitting, given these films are about reproduction and so on, that his son would be the one who seems to have, you know, taken up that mantle. So, yeah, beautiful.
An odd thing to pass on. You can check out Josh Nelson's blog at filmology.com. So it's PH, not with an F. Josh, thank you.
Pleasure.